We're back. It's episode 56 of the TV Talk Machine. I'm Jason Snell. Across the internet from me, your chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Well rested.
Yeah, good. Good.
Yeah.
You got to get some rest. There's a lot we got a lot of letters that we didn't get to last week. So
we're going to
load that up, but first there's some premieres coming this week that you may not have seen and may not be reviewing even, but I feel like we should at least talk about them. I'm excited that the why is this on CBS, but new superhero entry from Greg Berlanti, who's the producer of Flash and Arrow, Supergirl is coming on the 26th.
Yes, it is. And I think Dan Feinberg is going to review that. Mm-hmm. So I want to watch that as well. That's something I know you're going to watch that.
Yep.
I think you should actually watch that and then report back
okay.
to us.
Assignment accepted.
And it's not bad homework. We've had some bad homework.
No, this is not. I'm going to watch it anyway, but I will report back. I will report back on Supergirl.
I want to know on Supergirl, the thing after people watch it, I would like to hear back. Is are you coming to it into this from a different environment and then gravitating towards the mothership that is CBS? Because that's the question that needs to be answered for CBS. Will people come to Supergirl because they don't really have any other genre type series this? I wonder what the ratings will be on that. I'm kind of excited to look at that.
Will your NCIS's and your Limitless's and all of that roll into Supergirl, or is it just going to be people like me? It'll be interesting to see. CBS.
Well, I think there's going to be people who definitely just snap it off and say, that's not a show for me. But will that void be filled by people like you and me coming to it from outside?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. They've been showing a lot of clips. They've been doing some work to promote it. I think it looks interesting. It could be good. It's interesting that they're doing, it's not – in as far as we can tell, it's not connected to the Flash and Arrow or anything like that, and this is a world that Superman is in but is like never spoken of other than obliquely because it's not a show about Superman and they don't want to show Superman. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle all of that and how the who are the villains and what is her world like, because that's one of the challenges with a show like this is, are you bringing in, Supergirl's not a famous hero with a great rogues gallery, so are they lifting some sort of lesser enemies from Superman's canon, and it'll be interesting to see. But one of my favorite shows of all time, is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Woo-hoo!
Which is about a girl who is underestimated and actually has superpowers and is a superhero. And so, hey, Supergirl, I'm willing to give that a shot because that is in my wheelhouse.
I agree, and I think it is in your wheelhouse. I agree on that.
Yep, thank you.
And I think that it bears watching just from a TV, scientist way. I'm looking forward to that.
Wicked City is also coming.
Yeah.
Any read on that yet?
Yeah. I'm not going to review it. I don't think Dan's reviewing it either, which should tell you something. I think you farmed that
pass.
Out. Another pass. Person. pass. Because I believe Dan has actually seen more than I think I've seen 15 or 20 minutes of it. He's seen the whole thing. It's not gripping. And, it's an anthology series. And I think that ABC got into the game with that because they were like, yes, American Crime, we scored with that. And, they did a couple of series that were limited or anthology series, and they did pretty well. So you can't fault them for going more in for that. But, what I've seen from Wicked City, the first one is set in 1982 Sunset Strip. It's a serial killer case, and there's not enough serial killer stories on TV. You know that.
Yeah, and it's on the Sunset Strip, so the idea is that it's like CD, and you're going to get your CD kind of dirty, nasty neighborhood and a bunch of characters who are from the tough part of town. And
with a little bit of rock and roll.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw an ad for it in Entertainment Weekly that totally turned me off of it because it was like a woman, just the bottom part of her face. So she's got the red lipstick and all of that. And there's a man's hand like grabbing her neck. And I thought, that's pretty gross. That's just, hey guys, it's
exploitation.
It's violence against women on TV. I'm like, yay. Yeah. No, thank you. No.
Well, all I will say to that, because I hope this series does just die and go away. We have too much TV as it is. Let's get rid of these shows. I will say that Wicked City at the press tour came under withering attacks by people because there is it is exploitative, and there is an unnecessarily gruesome, egregiously gruesome scene with a woman in that in like the first 5 minutes of the series. So
great,
stay away.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Is your buddy Mr. Elementary coming back too?
Yes, Elementary is coming back. I'll watch that. Yeah. You know what?
Johnny Lee Miller, you're Lucy Liu.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, it's comfort food for me. Yeah. I'm a firm believer now in comfort food. Same with The Blacklist. The other night, it always makes me laugh, right? I have all this new stuff. I have new stuff that I actually have in my possession that people are dying to watch, and I haven't watched any of it. Because I was like, well, let's see, what should I watch tonight? I'm like, oh, look, there's two Blacklists. And I enjoyed them. I just didn't have to think anything. I just sat back and
enjoyed some spadering.
I did.
Fine spadering.
There was some gratuitous spadering.
That's good. That's why that show exists, is for the spadering.
That's why I watched it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the news. Should we dive into the letters?
We should.
This is the almost all letters edition. Twitter, Lunar Obverse wrote in to say, basically to send us this link, and I don't know if you've seen this link. It's the people who, it's the people who on location shooting on Homeland were hired to do graffiti, and so they wrote in Arabic lots of things about how Homeland is racist.
Yes, they were told. I retweeted that out to, not from that person, but I retweeted that out. Maybe that's where they got it. Who knows? They were definitely punked. It's just so great. So they shot it in Berlin, and they wanted, quote unquote, in the story, if you read that story, people who knew Arabian street artists. And so they found a group of people who said, you know what? Let's just punk your show because we don't agree with it and we think it's racist and all this stuff. And so they did, and of course no one checked it. No one checked the spelling. No one checked what they were saying, and they got them on a numerous location shots in backgrounds of graffiti. So that's going to stay for a while.
So a few weeks ago when I was in Portland at the XOXO Festival, there was a really good presentation about a guy who was talking about, he used an example in a video game, and it's one of these video games where you're a soldier and you're in combat somewhere, and it's got this hotel that's got this giant Arabic sign on it. And he points out, you know, like, here's some basics of Arabic, and this sign is like literally somebody chose an Arabic font and typed hotel, and it's like it's left to right instead of right to left. It's just, it's completely wrong. And his point was, you know, it isn't that hard to show care for this stuff and hire a translator or hire somebody to do the localization. And when you let stuff like this through, it shows you don't care. It shows that your priorities are not representing this stuff accurately at all. And that's what I took away from that story, is the producers of Homeland don't care what the graffiti says. They don't care what stuff written in Arabic says. And I hate to say it, but that kind of proves their point, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and it's just because they say that the series is it's got a bent to it that is, you know, obviously pro-American and anti-Muslim, but in ways that are not thoughtfully explored, just mostly for ratings and for action. And then that was their way of protesting. Yeah. So good for them. I'm happy they did
that. It'll be interesting to see if on the all future video releases of that show, that stuff all gets wiped or something.
Yeah,
would not surprise
me. I'm sure they have to do something because we're coming up this Sunday on the third, four. You said that'd be the fourth episode. So yeah, we'll see if they fix it yet.
our pal Indy Sarah, with love from the 317.
Oh, love Indy Sarah. Mm-hmm.
She just wrote in to say, thought your listeners might want to know, Jane the Virgin season one is now streaming on Netflix. So there you go. If you want to, if you don't want to dive in with season two, you can get record season two while you go back and get caught up with season one on Netflix.
They should do that for sure. Yep. They should do it. I'm so excited that, and it wasn't just me. There's a lot of other critics who said, you know what, we got to stop talking about, you know, we're worried that they're not going to get the tone right anymore. They did it for 22 episodes, which is a lot.
Got to put some faith into them at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And as I told, I tweeted out some appreciation for the show after watching the fall premiere for season two, which was spectacular and funny and didn't miss a beat. picked up right where it left off and was as perfectly tone smart as I wanted it to be. You know, in like 3 weeks, they're going to have the equivalent of two full cable series. So it tells you how much that how much they're taxed to churn out these full season network shows. It's a lot.
It's crazy. You know? Yeah. Well, I'm still getting caught up with Arrow season three, and because I came to that show late, and God, those CW shows, it's like 23 episodes or something. It's crazy.
Yeah. Uh huh.
It's a lot of TV.
I know it's
too much TV.
It's too much TV. I want the model changed.
Yeah. So listener Jacob says, what do you think, Tim, of The Leftovers, and is it worth watching?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of it. I was a huge fan last year. I like the two episodes I've seen, or now three, from this season. And I like it. I think it totally reset itself into a different environment. It kept the same, you know, it got to move away from the book that it was based on. J.J. Abrams was able to explore what that new world would be like. They did a great job. I think I would like it to be slightly a little bit more dark. It is dark, but I did love what it turned a lot of people off, but I did love the sort of harrowing feeling of loss that permeated the first season. A lot of people didn't like that. I liked it because I thought, wow, this is an exploration of grief in ways that, that TV hasn't done before. And so now they're moving a little bit past that now, but they're also bringing in the idea that, and I loved how they brought it up. Like, there's a great scene in the second episode of this season where somebody mentions, it was somebody from MIT, as a matter of fact, and they're like, well, it'll help us predict when it happens again. And a person who lived through it and lost people said, you think it's going to happen again? Like she hadn't thought of it, right? Like, you don't think that it's like a once-in-a-lifetime event. And the scientist is like, well, why wouldn't it? And I love that idea. It's like you think it's this miracle, awful miracle in some way. It takes wipes out 2% of the population, and you don't think it's going to happen. It's an anomaly. But the scientist is like, well, why wouldn't it? And it creates a whole other creepy aspect to the second season. So love that.
And I think you said J.J. Abrams and meant Damon Lindelof. Is that right?
Oh yeah. Sorry.
It's a lost connection that happens.
It is. Yeah.
It's okay.
It's that. Plus, when I was in Banff, I talked to JJ's dad. So there's the Abrams connection.
Let's see. Next up is from our loyal listener, My Vogue on Poetry, in the 716, who had so much to say that he wrote us an email instead of just tweeting to us.
Yeah. See, that's where to be a leader on the Twitter side has a little drawback.
Yeah, that's right. It's very limited to what you can say. So he writes, every fall I pick a few shows to get caught up on before their fall premieres. This year I chose iZombie and Gotham and really enjoyed binge-watching both of them. But now that I'm caught up, I'm not enjoying them nearly as much. I compare it to trying to read several books at once, one chapter a week. It's not nearly as engaging. Netflix is one solution with dropping whole seasons of shows. Do you think the cable or broadcast networks would ever do a 2 or 3 week event where a show like Fargo was on every night? I'm sure there are plenty of reasons why it wouldn't maximize their profits or it would mess with their DVR ratings, but you would get maximum impact for the story. I look forward to the simultaneous worldwide release of the podcast every week, and have asked my kids to refer to me as legendary, thanks to the status bestowed upon me due to my relentless podcast question submissions. Loyal listener, My Vogue on Poetry in the 716. So event TV, sort of, is there a network or cable equivalent in some way to the binge phenomenon?
I don't think there will be, but before I get to that, can I just add to the legacy of My Vogue on Poetry? Because if you think about it, the real title is MVP. It's an MVP.
MVP?
Yeah.
The legendary MVP.
The legendary MVP. Mm-hmm. Really contributing. Way to help us out. I don't think... Well, look, it did happen with Aquarius, right?
They put the whole thing up for binge-watching on streaming, right?
Right, and they're just giving up. And there's literally no way they can make the argument that it worked for them. They're like, oh, we got all these great numbers. Well, you got no money for it, though, because you just gave it away. You didn't run it on your linear platform, and no one would buy ads on that got any, you know, were able to justify the cost. You basically gave it away. You lost money on it, probably. Then they renewed it, and they dumped it on Saturday night when no one watches It's only NBC would do something that I love NBC. I don't want them ever to change. I want them always to walk into the plate glass window. That's my or trip and go out the window and fall off the building. That's the NBC I love. NBC I love. But you know, I don't think anybody's gonna do that because it doesn't really work very well. It's if you have a place that you can go to binge it, like Netflix or Hulu, you're there. You're on a site. You just do it while you're there. If you actually run everything once a week or once a day for a week, you still have to come back.
Right.
I mean, you're taping it, but you've got to put yourself in the seat the next night and the next night and the next night. It's just not conducive to how people actually live their lives.
I mean,
and we're forgetful humans.
He's basically describing miniseries, right? Which is what if you ordered a 6-hour or 8-hour thing and you ran it on successive nights in a big block instead of across 8 weeks? And I guess you could do that, but you know, and the networks generally do that when they're trying to burn something off. They'll run blocks, not promote it. I think I've seen that, like the BBC has tried that sometimes, where they do like events over the course of a week and all that. But it's kind of a stunt, and I'm not sure it actually works, because if you miss people on day one, you know, it's like on the web when they would break stories into like 5 pages on the web, you could look at the stats and know that page one would get read, and then like it would be 80% of the people on page two and 50% on page three and 20% on page four. It's like you're just going to lose everybody. You're not going to get them back. And if they miss day one, they're not going to come back because they've missed day one. They're already out. So, you know, it seems unlikely to me too.
And I think it teaches the people that, I mean, the networks have taught us that they're burning stuff off when they show it in blocks.
Also, you lose the word of mouth. That's the thing that bothers me about Netflix. At least with Netflix, you get the word of mouth. You don't get the water cooler talk about, did you see what happened last week? But at least you get the word of mouth where you can say, oh, you should watch this show, and they can go do it. But on a network, you know, if you miss that one window, it's gone.
Yeah.
So.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're terrible about replaying things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, they showed that on PBS, but now it's probably not going to come back for another 7 months. Yeah. So I was like, what? Okay, forget it.
All right. Scott in the 913 wrote in to say, I wonder if Tim has any news about what's going on with Person of Interest. I know it's no CSI Cyber, which is not a thing, or Scorpion, but I enjoy it. I thought it had decent ratings, and last season ended on a cliffhanger, so I was surprised to see it wasn't on the fall schedule and that its future was in doubt. It got renewed for a short order for mid season. Is that right?
And it's, I think it's the CBS's way of them, anything can happen, but I think it's their way of saying, I think the way they sold it was, we're going to bring it back smaller. If the audience is there, we'll try it again. We'll keep with it. But really what that signals is like, we did this so that no one can wrap this thing up.
Right.
In a way that's respectful for all his contributions to the show, and in a way that doesn't alienate the fan base, which is, I think you have to do that these days. And networks haven't done that very well. So I'm happy that CBS is doing this. So I wouldn't think there would be any beyond this.
Yeah. It sounds like they're wrapping it up. Although, yeah, you never know. If it does well, they might say, well, we can bring it back for another 10 or something like that. It's a much smaller investment than 22 episodes, right?
Yeah. I mean, they can, you know, I think that, I think, what is it? Like, I think Elementary is back on November 5th. So somewhere in the mid-season block, it'll
show up.
It'll show up. And it'll have a nice send-off.
Okay, here's the next one. This is from Jenny from Down the Block.
From Down the Block,
the
yes.
The almost area code of record, the 650.
Mm-hmm.
Cousins. You've been talking about the buy-in moment for shows, but in this platinum age of too much TV, they're very nice. I think more about the buy-out moment. Oh, see, this is similar to what we were talking about last week.
Yep.
The moment where even if you're okay with a possibly ridiculous premise of a show, but you go, nuh-uh, not going there, I'm out of here. For example, The Limitless will have a buyout moment for me next episode if Mr. Druggy Smarty Pants gives in to blackmail rather than figuring out a way to turn the tables or at least stand up for himself. Tim had a one a while back when Daredevil brought a billy club to a gunfight and lived. What are some of your recent or notable buyout moments? When do you not buy in and you just go, nope, life's too short, got to do something else?
Well, you know what was funny? I teach this class at the California College of the Arts. It's a great art school. And so it's not totally into the current crop, but I showed them a number of comedies, so cable level comedies. And when I showed them So I showed them Louie and I showed them You're the Worst, which they liked both of those. But when I showed them Man Seeking Woman, we talked about this opt-in, opt-out moment concept. And I've talked to them about that the whole semester. But this was really stark. And it was really funny to hear their take on it, because this is a show that's going to come back. But it does actually – it does have that moment. Like, so people were like, yeah, you know, when he breaks up with his girlfriend, he walks out and then it just starts raining on him and only him in New York. And then a bird falls on his head. And people are like, yeah, I was kind of liking that. And then I was kind of in on it. And then when they cut to the fact that he's actually going to be – he goes to the dinner date and his sister sets him up and says that the person's from Sweden. And we look across the street and there's this blonde woman. But behind the blonde woman in a dumpster is a troll. And it turns out the troll is the dinner date. Like, half the class was out. They're like, I'm done. I'm done. And so it was very funny. And then some of them were like, yeah, I didn't like it at the beginning because I thought it was going to be a rom-com. And then I saw the troll and I'm like, yes, I'm in. So it's out there. And I don't know about this year. I think, you know, there was not a show. I'm trying to think if there's a show that's new that – you know, I was already in like Fargo, Nick, and all that stuff. I think that's – and my stuff is like, I'm more worried about like is the affair and is Homeland. Are they going to go sideways and lose me? I don't think there's a new series where I have an opt-in out or opt-out moment on it.
I had the moment with Doodle Booty.
Oh, right. Okay. Where, that's a good point.
In episode two, I definitely felt that, where they went down this whole subplot about the guy, the male lead, and I just there was a moment in there where they just kept feeding me more information about this guy as if to make me interested in him, and I said, you know what? Forget it. Yeah. Forget it. This is ridiculous. I don't care about this character. I hear a lot of people talking about Lost. I mean, that's one of the classics where you talk. I know about the polar bear. Mm-hmm. There are so many outlandish moments in Lost where people, I think, get fooled into thinking they're seeing a human drama, and then they realize that they're really not. They're seeing something that's kind of a wacky sci-fi thing. I've heard a lot of people talk about how they hate the season where there's time travel and they go back to the 70s, and that baffles me because that's one of my favorite things in that show. But I think what it is it's just too far. Yeah. It's too science fictional for people who are not interested in watching a show that has time travel. That's just, no, I will not, you know, and that's fine. It's not for everybody. But it's funny that for me, it was like, awesome, time travel, great. And other people are like, no, forget it. That's where I draw the line. It's like all the other crazy stuff they kind of went along with. But the time travel part was like, nope, done. Can't do it.
Oh, yeah. It's class. I mean, that show, I mean, that to me, that's a case study series for multiple opt-in and opt-out moments.
No, it's right? It's like they're ratcheting up insanity.
Yeah, you were never fully on or off, right?
No, and it's like, okay, you bought that. Well, what about this? Okay, you bought that. But what about this? For six seasons.
Oh, my God. What got the part where I was totally involved and then I was like, I'm struggling here. You're making this very hard was when they – when they turned the crank, basically. They turned the big wheel the island disappeared.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I cannot go there with you. I would just couldn't do it. That part, I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it either disappears or it doesn't, some scientific way, but you don't turn a crank, a big wheel.
Pirate ship wheel. Yeah. Whatever it was.
Struggle.
Okay, let's move on to John from the 415. Classic. Dear persons with TV interests. Nice.
I like that.
Well, my wife and I love the Graham Norton show. Maybe it's the booze, or maybe the American stars assume no one will watch, but it's lighthearted, gets great dialogue and stories, but without Jimmy Fallon style fake situational humor. Or is it humor with a U? I can't understand why BBC America doesn't immediately rebroadcast the show to American audiences. With the cavalcade of American and British stars promoting film releases, it seems ratings would be high. Yet I can see new episodes have been shown in the UK but not in the US. It's also frustrating that they seem to over edit the American version. Any idea why BBC America doesn't get better inventory and timing from BBC One? I feel like Top Gear had a similar fate in terms of release date and editing. John in the 415.
Yeah, that's still an issue. They're still trying to close the gap. The same way that PBS is trying to close the gap for stuff it buys from BBC, BBC America is trying to, it's actually at a greater disadvantage in that the window is wider than it should be. And the John and Graham Norton show is indicative of that. You know what? I think the reason for this is kind of a sidestep, but I think the reason why late show works for me now is because it seems like it's a Graham Norton show, right? I mean, it's just I like having three people on a couch and a upbeat, funny host. And I think there's probably elements of that that we're taking directly from Graham Norton. And that's, you know, you're talking about why does it work? I think that it being in another country, some of the American actors loosen up a little bit. And Graham Norton obviously makes them do crazy stuff. It's a good series. I think that we're trying to do that here in this country now as well on CBS. So
I wonder. So James Corden also English, so maybe it's just English hosts. I do wonder if they produce that show for the UK market, if there are some rights issues with music or stuff like that that makes it more complicated for them, or if they have to edit to fit a different time slot or something, because there's got to be something going on there. Because it's true, a lot of the American TV shows would go the next day in the UK and still do, and I'm a little surprised that they couldn't do that come in the other direction. But I guess they've decided it's better to kind of do an edited together package of it and put it out on BBC.
Yeah, maybe that's it. There could be some rights issues, but it could be maybe editing just takes a lot of time because they have to put commercials in it here, and there's no commercials in it in the UK.
Yeah, I think so. It's a BBC One show, then definitely not. Art from the 425.
Ooh, yes.
I was listening to the feedback section of the last episode, not the actual last episode, because this has sat for a little while. Began to think about the search for Northern Exposure alternatives. Remember Quirky?
Yay.
What Quirky came up completely dry. There was a plenty of history of Quirky TV, but nothing comes close to the level of that show. Being on an airplane at the time, I had nothing better to do than think about this a bit. So here's what I've got. Quirky is one dimension of the legacy of Northern Exposure, I think. The unique combination of man out of element premise, the isolated setting, the large ensemble cast, let the writers create this fully fleshed out, self-contained world where little bits of magic and mysticism occasionally bubbled up, and yet it remained completely believable. As Tim said, it made you want to live there, and I think we all secretly thought it was out there somewhere. Oh well, it's something to aspire to, I guess. For the record, I won't say Northern Exposure is the best TV show ever, but it is my favorite TV show ever. If they just reran it, that would be fine with me. Art from the 425. Nice letter. But no progress.
No, I don't think there is anything as quirky. Well, my point, I think, is Jane the Virgin is the quirkiest one.
Yeah, I think you're right. That is definitely in a different world from our world.
and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's pretty quirky too, but nothing like, you know.
No.
Nothing like that.
Nothing like Northern Exposure.
I know. I wish they would just redo it.
Yeah, maybe so.
Modernize it.
Next one's from Jennifer in the 650.
Another
local.
Yeah, Jennifer. Mm-hmm.
Hello, gentlemen. I love James Corden and The Late Late Show.
Hey, we were just talking.
We were just talking about him.
He
is willing to be silly and make himself the butt of the joke. Plus, he sang with Stevie Wonder and was able to hang out with him. I'm jealous, but I digress. Tim. This is a very important point. Very important question. I would like to know if you've met him and is he nice as he seems? I hope he isn't a jerk like some celebrities. So what's James Corden really like, Tim?
I have actually met James Corden a couple of times, not in ways that he would probably remember because it hasn't been that way. Before he was named host at CBS, he did a show called The Wrong Mans.
Oh yeah,
which I loved for Hulu. So if you're on Hulu and you track it down, it's great. He's so good in it. And in fact, my first question from him when he was hired, I was like, "How can you give up this acting career and this writing career? He's so talented." And now we don't. I mean, we still think of him that way, but it would be easy to not have any knowledge of his past and look at him and just think, "Oh, he's just a talk show host." I think he's phenomenally talented. He is a nice person, yes. And he was the host of this summer's TCA Awards. And I wanted the part that I loved about that was he's a goofball. And I love the fact that he's a goofball on that show. And I think the carpool karaoke is one of the great things that highlights his skills and makes sometimes unlikable musical artists likable because they just loosen up. He's got a gift for that. But I will say this other aspect of James Corden, who is just to answer the question, yes, he is a nice guy. But to make him more likable, he came out at the TCAs and went dark. He went mean at the TCA Awards, and he was like joking about it. He's like, "Yeah, you thought I'm going to come out here with this late night talk show banter," and he was just giving it to us. I mean, just lambasting us. So it was good, and it's very funny. I like the critics being made fun of. So he has that other side, and you almost forget that until you see some of his past stuff. But very talented man.
All right, I hope that suffices, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, we got two Johns here.
And if anybody wonders, Jaime Camille, from who's like billions and billions of fans across the world, especially in Latin America, one of the nicest people you will ever meet, from Jane the Virgin.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep.
Okay, we got two Johns to end up here from coast to coast. First, John from the 916, that's Sacktown.
Yep.
John says, "I love Manhattan. I know it's on a network no one's heard of, but we caught it on Hulu, ended up purchasing on iTunes. The wife and I love it. The quality is awesome. It's like watching a movie. So there's someone out here looking forward to the next season. I also just finished Longmire, which moved to Netflix. Another great show, which I haven't heard much about. Any thoughts about that? Hopefully Netflix continues it." You've said nice things about Longmire in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, I think season one, I gave Longmire a good review. I might have actually reviewed season two as well. But then I fell off of it. Just because there's other things.
Yeah.
You know what? I was really happy that Netflix picked up Longmire for season four. And I, even though I haven't watched those episodes, I'm going to go back and watch them. I like that series. It's, it was good. It's well done. I'm happy for that. And you know what? I will say this, second season of Manhattan, I think a lot of critics sort of knew that this, I mean, the show had to be good in its second season. But once it was good, you could sense that there was this movement like, hey, let's support this show. Mm. It's getting good reviews. And there was this whole, it's part of what we do sometimes is to get people to find a little lost gem. And as much as I say, look, no one's watching it because it's kind of my poster series, it is still a great series. I take nothing away from it. And maybe all these ancillary ways of buying it on iTunes and over the top stuff, they might be able to make money on it. I don't know. It's expensive. They shoot it on location. It's got a pretty big cast. They added some pretty big heavyweights this year. I don't know where they're getting the money to do it. But I hope it gets a third season even. But the second one is got rave reviews. So keep watching, enjoy it, and don't worry about where the money comes from. That's somebody else's problem.
And we have one more. This is a letter about Manhattan from Manhattan, because it's John in the 212, who we heard from 2 weeks ago when he was talking about some issues that he had with Limitless. He said, "Add one to the count. The last five episodes sat on my DVR of Manhattan for several months, but I did finally find an opportunity to watch them." And then he says, "Your point about not being into stories if you're noticing the flaws, it's that maybe when you nitpick something, it's because you're not into it, was well taken. The line about the drug not giving him knowledge of trivia made me laugh out loud on the subway." There was another one of that in episode two of Limitless where he's going to take the pill and there's something. I'm like, it doesn't give him more facts. It just makes him smarter. Where it was like, and they didn't go there, but it was a moment where, like, they're not going to make it that, like, suddenly he knows things that he didn't know before, because that is not, it's, you know, that does not how the Limitless
that breaks
works.
That breaks the rule book.
It does. Anyway, so thanks to John, who we were speculating that he was a lawyer, but he's not a lawyer. He's a piano player and something of a big deal in crossword puzzle circles. It's actually true. He is a former, I believe, crossword puzzle champion.
Nice.
I think he's in that documentary about the crossword puzzles, and I remember him. He used to be one of the contributors to the old TV Barn, Aaron Barnhart's old David Letterman thing. The newsletter, the late show news, and all of that. John Delphin was in there. That's who it is. It's John in the 212. So it's nice. It was nice to hear that he's listening to our podcast from Manhattan. So thank you, John.
And also happy to have a piano player.
Yes.
From the arts world, and subtract one. Not that we don't like lawyers, but subtract one lawyer. Yeah. Add a piano player.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's all the letters. That's all I got.
That's all you got.
It's true.
And you know what? It actually kind of does work in the fact that things are kind of slowing down. But, you know, it's because Halloween's coming up, and then it's going to be the holidays. But the unveiling of new shows have slowed down. I will say this, throwing it out there again. People, go watch Fargo season one and catch up on season two.
All right.
The best thing on TV.
That's a good one. I guess we'll get into November sweeps, so we'll have like weird, which is you know, kind of not a big as big a deal as it used to be, but they still do stunts in November, right?
They do some stunts, and we actually will have a couple of other things, to pretty big shows to review coming up on our next show.
Oh, that's exciting. All right. Well, just to remind everyone out there, you can tweet at us at TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can visit us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. You can post messages there, and we look there too before we do the show. And I collate all of the listener letters, and then we read them. And that's how podcasting works. And then we record a podcast, and then we press the record button, and we do the podcast, and we press the stop button, and I save it, and then I post it, and then you listen. And that's how podcasts are made.
Do you know what?
What?
I didn't swear in either of the last two podcasts.
Would you like to rectify that right now?
No, I'm just going to make your life easy.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening. Tim, I'll talk to you in a week.
Okay.